It's been refused.
Which one refused it?
What do you mean, which one? It's a 429, too many requests.
That's the status code. It doesn't tell you which of them said no. Five separate things stood in that request's way, and only four of them are our code.
Five.
Five, asking five completely different questions. People call the whole lot rate limiting, and then wonder why raising a limit didn't help.
All right, back up. What is this thing the request even landed on?
One service. Everything you see on the website is a request into it. Every page, every panel on that page, and the mobile app, and anybody using the public API, it's been running for a bit over 2 years.
And when a request arrives, what's the first thing that happens to it?
The first thing isn't ours at all. There's a layer sitting in front of the whole service, Cloudflare, and it can turn you away before a single line of our code runs. Wrong country, or an address somebody has banned, and you simply never arrive.
So we never see those at all?
We never see them, and we can't tell you what its rules are either. They don't live in the code base. They live in somebody's dashboard.
That feels like a thing you'd want written down.
It is, and we lean on it harder than you'd think. The country a request came from is something it tells us, and if that's ever missing in production, we refuse rather than guess.
Right, so for the ones that do get through.
The first useful thing is that something works out who you are. And I want to be precise about the word, it works out who you are, and then it decides nothing at all.
That seems like half a job.
It's deliberately half a job. You might be carrying a login from the website, or an API key, or nothing at all. That step reads whichever of those you brought and writes down the answer. It does not decide whether you're allowed anything, because it doesn't know what you're asking for yet.
So who are the people arriving?
Three sorts, really. Somebody logged into the website carrying a session, somebody on the public API carrying a key, and anybody at all carrying nothing. A lot of the site works logged out.
And they're treated differently all the way down.
All the way down. The anonymous caller gets a small allowance and no bill. The logged in one gets whatever their plan says. The key holder gets their plan and gets metered for it. Same code path, three different sets of answers to every question that follows.
And the deciding comes later.
The deciding comes later, and it comes in layers. But there's one more identity step first. If you came in on an API key, that key has a list of paths it's allowed to touch, and that's checked right there. Wrong path for that key and you're done, before anybody's thought about limits.
Fine, now the four things.
In order, the first asks, are you going too fast? That's a bucket that fills up at a fixed rate and every request takes one. Empty bucket, refused. It exists so nobody can hammer us, and it has nothing to do with what you're paying.
That's the one everybody means by rate limiting.
That's the one everybody means. The second asks something quite different. Are you allowed this endpoint at all? Not too fast, allowed. Some things are on a plan and some aren't.
So a slow request can still be refused.
A perfectly slow, patient request gets refused because your plan doesn't include the thing you asked for. Different question, different answer, same status code if you're not careful.
And the third?
Can you afford it? Some callers are billed by credits, and this is where the balance is actually checked and the credits actually taken.
Hold on, taken before it runs.
Before it runs, because afterwards is too late to say no. And it's the balance itself that gets read at that moment, not a number cashed from a minute ago, so a caller who's just run out is stopped straight away.
Okay, and the fourth?
The fourth doesn't refuse anything. It sits on the way out and writes down what you actually used, so it can be billed. That one only applies to API keys, nobody's metering you for loading a page in your browser.
Three that can say no, and one that just watches.
And one more, on some routes only. If the thing you asked for returns intelligence, names, entities, that whole side of it, there's an extra meter, because that data is the expensive product, and it's counted separately from ordinary requests.
So back to my 429, I can't tell which one it was.
which is the honest complaint, and it's why knowing their five separate things matters. Raising a plan doesn't help if it was the bucket. Slowing down doesn't help if it was the plan.
Right, say I get through all of it, now what?
Now something finally runs a query. And here's where it gets interesting, because there isn't one database behind this. There are two, and which one you land on depends entirely on the shape of your question.
Give me the two.
Ask for balances. What does this address hold right now? And that's Postgres. It's a lookup. You know exactly which rows you want.
And the other?
Ask for transfers. Every movement involving this address over 5 years, sorted by value, filtered to a few tokens, and that's Elasticsearch. That's not a lookup, that's a search, and it's a different kind of engine.
Does that change how they're protected?
It does, and this is the bit I'd have missed. Search has its own separate limiter, on top of everything else, a completely different allowance from the ordinary one.
Why does it need its own?
Because one search can cost 100 times what one lookup costs. If you let both draw on the same allowance, somebody doing something cheap and somebody doing something enormous look identical until the search cluster falls over.
So the expensive thing is rationed separately.
Rationed as its own resource, because that's what it is.
Same website, same page, possibly.
Very often the same page. One panel is served out of Postgres and the one next to it out of Elasticsearch, and as a user, you have no idea.
Is one of them the real one?
Postgres is the real one. The search index is built from what the pipeline produces, and it can be rebuilt. But for the question transfers asks, the real one is the wrong tool, you'd be waiting all day.
And in front of both of those?
A cache for the things that can stand being slightly stale. Memcached. Ask for something popular, and often nothing is queried at all, you get the answer somebody else's request already paid for.
How does the credit thing know what to charge before it's run anything?
Because the price is written on the route. When somebody adds an endpoint, they declare what it costs, and for the big ones it isn't a flat price, it's per row returned. Ask for 1,000 transfers, pay for 1,000 transfers.
So the cost lives with the endpoint, not in some pricing table off to the side.
It lives with the endpoint, which means adding one forces you to say what it's worth.
Okay, is that everything? Request in, answer out.
That's everything for a request. But there's a second way data reaches a screen, and it isn't requests at all.
Which is?
WebSockets. You open a connection and leave it open, and things get pushed to you as they happen. That's a separate service, several copies of it, and it's how anything live on the site works.
Why not just ask repeatedly?
Because you'd be asking constantly and almost always getting the same answer. Everything we just walked through, the four gates, the query, the cache, would run every few seconds per open browser tab to tell you nothing changed.
So the two paths are pull and push.
Pull for anything you asked a question about. Push for anything that has to arrive on its own.
All right, last thing. Anything in there that bites people?
One, and it's my favorite, because it's completely invisible.
Go on.
There's a file that tells search engine crawlers which parts of the site they may fetch. Normally, that's about pages. But Google doesn't only fetch the page, it runs it, like a browser, and the page then calls back for its data.
And if the crawler isn't allowed to make that call?
It refuses to make it. Not because we blocked it, because we told it not to, in that file, and it's obedient. So the page renders, and the panel that needed that data renders in its error state.
Only for Google.
Only for Google. The site is completely fine for every human being. But the version of the page in the search index has a broken panel in it, and nobody finds out, because nobody is looking at the site through Google's eyes.
So there's a list.
There's a list of the paths a crawler is allowed to call. And if you add an endpoint a logged-out page uses and forget the list, you have broken something you cannot see.
That's horrible.
It's the nicest kind of horrible. Everything works, and it's still wrong.
Give me the shape of the whole thing.
A A request arrives, gets past an edge that isn't even ours, then something works out who you are without judging you, and then four separate questions are asked in order: too fast, allowed, can you afford it, and what did you use? Then one query, to whichever of the two databases suits the question, quite possibly answered by a cache instead. And alongside all of it, an open connection pushing things that couldn't wait to be asked for.